Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzewski. We're glad you're with us on the show today. In studio with me is Mayor Tony Rozworski of Lafayette, and we'd love to have your questions for him during our next half an hour. You can always call those in to area code 765-496-1999. Email them to ask@wbaa.org and tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Stan. How are you doing today?
Pretty good, thanks. Appreciate you being here as always. Let me start with a listener question that's come in since you were last on our show. It's an anonymous emailer who asks, what accountability do landlords have in situations where there is drug-related activity in one of their rental units? This person says, there are a few apartments near me that always seem to rent to drug dealers, and I'm starting to wonder if it's a coincidence. Is there any sort of due diligence requirement for tenants, background checks, etc.?
Well, we certainly hope that all of our landlords in our community, and certainly we have some great landlords, and then we probably, in all honesty, have some that don't do as good a job screening tenants. There is no legal requirement on how they screen their tenants or what processes they use when they decide who they will rent to. Obviously, there are some legal requirements as it pertains to fair housing and things like that. But, you know, we do work with our landlords, our police department, Brian and Scott in our crime prevention unit there do a lot with landlords. We've even had training sessions with landlords, and we continue to have those discussions through our engineering department. Most people want to do the right thing. They don't want that type of activity in their units, and they're very helpful in working with us. Unfortunately, again, I mean, I'll just be honest with you, but not everybody. And so we just have to encourage people that lives around those units where there are potential drug dealing taking place or other criminal activity to please give us a call, and we can have the street crimes or the drug task force unit take a look at that, and we can try to actually work with the landlord. Cecil Johnson in our ordinance enforcement department of the engineer's office has a good relationship with a lot of people, and a lot of times he can get people to work with us. So we would encourage people to call in. Don't give up. Don't get discouraged. Keep calling, and we'll make a difference in the long run, and we'll just keep working on it. But no, there is no city legal requirement at this time on how they screen their tenants.
Is that something you've ever talked about having?
It is. In a larger context, we've looked at, and we're still researching right now, having what's called a nuisance ordinance. And you've probably seen that. There's a few of them in Indiana, not a lot, but throughout the United States, some other communities have those nuisance type ordinance. And that doesn't actually just pertain to a landlord. That would actually pertain to any property owner that after a certain number of police calls, and you can frame it, you know, in a lot of different ways, and communities have looked at it in different ways, and we've looked at it really dealing with the more serious type police calls where there would be somebody that was actually injured, drug dealing, not the minor calls. But after a certain number of police calls of a significant nature, there's a system of fines that go into place. And again, it wouldn't just be for a landlord. It would be for an actual property owner. If you had somebody stabbed on your property, if you had a shooting, if you had a drug bust that took place, then there could be a fine structure that would go in place because, one, it requires a lot of police calls, a lot of taxpayer resources that we're spending just in one location when we could be doing things for other people in the community, but also to send that strong message that, you know, there is, if you either rent to people that are involved in this activity or you associate with people that are involved in the activity in your home, that you're a detriment to your neighbors and the surrounding area. Not only do you face the chance of arrest, but there's also civil penalties in place to try to get that cleaned up. And so we've actually looked at a few other cities, and we are actively looking at that. And if we can get it written in a way that we feel that we're comfortable with it and meets the needs of Lafayette's fair and balanced, you know, I wouldn't be surprised that we don't enact something like that over the next few months.
A reminder, if you'd like to get your questions to Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski on today's Ask the Mayor here on WBAA, call them in to 496-1999. Email questions to ask@wbaa.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, it's sort of prescient that this person emailed this question because there's been a lot of talk. We had a conversation this morning with the director of the county ambulance service about the number of heroin overdoses that the county has seen, and unfortunately, it's nearly triple what it was the first quarter of last year to this year. How is your city responding to those numbers and to that sort of change in the way you have to use your resources?
Well, I mean, obviously, we've talked about this for almost 2 years now, the heroin and opiate epidemic that's kind of swept the country, and how that has affected communities from the way that law enforcement responds to the way the fire department responds to help with ambulance calls and those types of overdoses, to how we've been working as a community to see what additional treatment options there might be, addiction services that we can bring to the community, how we're trying to bring awareness to the problem. Now, the state legislature, there's several bills going through the state legislature right now that deals with this issue that could be helpful over the long term, and the federal government has also started to do some of those things. So it really is a national problem that we have to continue to work on. We know that there's an enforcement side of it, and our drug task force and our street crimes unit work diligently on trying to get those people that are dealing, trying to stop that flow of the drugs into the community as a whole. And then we have to do the community, the mental health piece, the addiction services piece, the awareness piece, the education, get the medical community on board with us on how they prescribe, pain medication. There was a good article that just came out that I think Dr. Kelly was quoted in it, that he just had some surgery and got a prescription for like 90 Oxycontin and really only needed 5 or 6. And so, all of those things have to be worked on, taken into consideration, and we have to work together as a unit. There's no one piece of that puzzle that will solve the whole problem. It really has to be that comprehensive approach. But it takes a just from a resource allocation, as the first part of your question, it's a tremendous allocation of resources to run all those calls. Our fire departments make those ambulance calls, the work that they do on scene, the time that they put into that. It's a significant use of our resources.
And what are you doing in terms of the interdiction side of it? Because it seems to me that when you get to have all of these overdoses, that is by nature a reactive stance. You can't treat somebody with Narcan until they've overdosed, for instance. So what about the front end of that? You talked about trying to make sure that you're getting to the dealers before they can get the product out there so that people can overdose on it. Are you finding that you need to ramp up efforts more in that side of it so that we nip it in the bud, so to speak?
Well, I mean, we have, we've added people to the street crimes unit. We've added people to the drug task force. I think I gave the figure last year. The street crimes unit made over 800 arrests just with 5 people, and we've put that 7 people in that unit now. We've strengthened the drug task force. But again, there are so many ways for drugs to be brought in, and then we also need help on the state and national level as part of that chain of getting heroin into the country. And so I feel like we've put a lot of resources to that. I feel like we're making progress on it. But again, that's only a piece of that puzzle. If somebody wants to get some type of illegal drugs, and of course it seems like every time we stop the flow of one drug, they figure out a way to, instead of heroin, to use spice, to take marijuana and lace it with different types of chemicals to increase the potency of marijuana. And so, we're never going to totally be able to get ahead of that game. And that's why we have to have these other partners working with us. And, I've talked about this before. I'm a strong believer in pre-K education. I think we got to go all the way down that food chain to good, solid pre-K education that get kids ready for kindergarten, that helps get them ready to read at third grade level when they're in third grade, and we have our Read to Succeed program, and that it is incredibly important to get people on a good path as they go through life to help with this. Now, we all know some people get addicted to this after a surgery, after some type of injury. They get addicted, and that piece we've got to attack by making sure that we've educated people on the signs and symptoms, we get them help early, and that we have the addiction and mental health services to actually treat them and to treat them for long enough periods of time that we actually get them better. To get over a heroin addiction, an opioid addiction, could literally take years. You're not going to be in a program for a couple months and all of a sudden you're well and better. And so So it's really a long-term treatment process. And there are groups in the community that are working on that. So I feel like we're going in a good direction. The United Way has been hosting a series of meetings looking at access to mental health services. Everybody is on board. You know, we're no longer at the point where people, you know, is this really a problem or is it not a problem? People understand it. They want to help. People are trying to make a difference. So I feel like we're going in the right direction, but it literally took years for the country to get to this point, and it's going to take a long time for us to work our way out of it.
It seems like heroin specifically is the big problem in the interview that our reporter Chris Marisivica did this morning with the County Ambulance Service gentleman. He was talking about how heroin overdoses specifically were what had spiked to more than double what they were the first quarter of last year. And so while you're right that the pill prescribing is a problem and that there are many ways to be addicted to opiates, what can be done, do you think, about heroin specifically, which to my mind, I'm not a doctor, but I don't believe there's anything to do but an illicit use of heroin. I don't know that it has any health effects.
Well, I mean, you know, part of the problem is, you know, a lot of the folks that get addicted originally to those prescription pain medications then turn to the heroin, because prescription pain medication like Oxycontin and different things, once you can't get that prescription anymore and you got to try to buy that type of stuff illegally, it's very expensive, where heroin is much cheaper. So it's a cheaper way to achieve the same type of high. The neuroreceptors in your brain, the feelings that you get are very similar between those prescription pain medications and heroin. And so people turn to that. And again, but it does go in cycles. I mean, if you think back, it was not too long ago that we were talking about meth and how destructive meth has been to, again, across the country, how we went from the beginning of meth to people literally being able to make it in the back of cars, in the trunks of cars, different methods, people using anhydrous ammonia, some people using red sulfur, all different types of ways of making meth. And every time, you know, we get kind of a handle on it, somebody comes up with something new and different that they can do. And like I said, people are lacing marijuana, the way they use spice. And so, you know, there's just not, I'd love to be able to tell you, yeah, if we do A, B, C, and D, we're always going to get this under control. But really, if we do A, B, and C, and D, we'll make a dent at it. We'll make it better. There's money involved. There's profit to be made. There's always going to be people out there that continue to look at ways to make new drugs, use drugs differently that they think there might be a market for. And so, again, we've got to get back down that food chain and try to stop that market from ever developing for the use of those drugs to make a significant difference in it, too.
Let's talk for a minute about ways you might find help to this. I wondered if your police force has ever engaged with the Drug Enforcement Agency or the FBI or anybody like that to try to get some added manpower, some added investigatory power to try to figure out how this could be stopped or slowed.
I mean, that's literally been taking place for decades. That was happening back in the 80s when I was a policeman, when we were dealing with lots of different things or different types of crimes. We've always worked closely with the FBI. We work with the DEA. We've worked with federal agencies, Secret Service, all kinds of things like that, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. We've always worked with them when it's applicable. I mean, obviously, federal law, state law are somewhat different, and procedures are different. You have, you know, district attorney prosecutors for the Northern District of Indiana and the Southern District of Indiana on the federal level, and we work with them also. In fact, you know, they were instrumental several years ago in bringing what was called the Weed and Seed Grant to our community, and where we set up several different programs. And so all the agencies here work with the state and federal agencies on different types of crimes, whether it could be money laundering or different types of fraud. Maybe it's tax evasion that gets tied into local crimes also. Or
I guess what I'm asking is there a consistent presence in the community from people who work from these outside agencies?
I wouldn't say there is a consistent presence. I mean, there are FBI agents that are stationed here in Tippecanoe County. The Secret Service, you know, we have Indianapolis, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. And if there is an applicable federal offense, they get worked on. But the reality is they don't have any extra manpower even to meet all the needs of the cases that they're supposed to be working on a federal level to get everything done that they need to get done. But they will assist. But and if there's certain things going on, but just they don't have 20 extra agents setting somewhere that they said they could send here to help. And, of course, if they did, we'd be pretty far down the food chain, the size of the community. And the, even though the problem is significant to us and we need to work on it, when you compare it to most places in the United States, our problem is still relatively small for their radar.
Your police department has created a position with the title Crime Prevention Specialist. This person's job duties include community outreach and social media communication and public appearances on behalf of the department trying to get the word out. Whom are you hoping this person is going to reach that you're not already reaching with, for instance, the meetings that have been going on, the community presence that you've been having your officers do more of in the last year or so?
Well, you know, several, almost 2 years ago, I've lost track a little bit. You know, we announced our crime initiatives, the different things we're going to do. We talked about beefing up that unit to get more people in that unit so we could actually get out to, and we do a lot. And, I want to thank everybody that's been involved with it, because we do a lot for just having two people in it. But the reality is there are many neighborhood groups still that we don't get to. There are many social service organizations, civic groups, school groups, parent groups. There are businesses that we'd like to give to actually give training on how to make your employees more safe, your business less susceptible to robbery, to burglary. So there are a lot of places that we can still go. In fact, our goal is, as we indicated originally, is to still add an additional person to that department so we can really spread that reach as far as we can. And even with all of those people in there, we still won't get to every group that we need to. You know, earlier your question from the that was anonymous about working with landlords, you know, we'd love to have enough people to offer, instead of just maybe having one meeting a year, maybe we could have quarterly meetings. We could do more updates. We could get more people to come because they couldn't come on that one specific date. So there will be no shortage of work for that position or the additional position. But I do believe in the long run, kind of like the education component I talked about, if we can get people more engaged, if we can get people more educated, if we can get people trained, if we can get them working with us, that exponentially allows us to help try to reduce crime, make the city safer. We can never hire as many police officers as we would have the ability to possibly, through one police officer, engage 40 or 50 citizens through a couple meetings that weren't engaged before. And as that number continues to grow and multiply, I think we'll see the benefit. The cost of that, the return on investment on that, in my mind, is just immeasurable what those positions will be able to do.
Let me ask you about the engagement side of it for a second, because and maybe this is going to be a stupid question, but one of the things I was thinking about as I was thinking about this job was, you know, the people we aren't reaching out to or that are maybe hardest to reach are the people who are involved with the drug activity, be it the dealers or the people who have become addicted and don't want to talk about it. Is there any way for the force to reach out into the community that has the problem that and, you know, hit it right at its center? Is there any way to do that?
Well, I mean, we have many, many officers, and I just went to a graduation of several more that are CIT trained, that are trained specifically to deal with people with mental illness and different types of problems. So we have a significant number of our force that's trained to deal with people just under those circumstances. They know what resources are available in the community. But if you're, we have Adam Murphy on staff, who does a lot of work with people that have addiction problems, homeless problems, that are looking for different types of services. We actually house some of those people through our Shelter Plus Care program, about 25 people that the city actually houses through a grant. But if you're breaking that down, Stan, to the point, do our officers have the time to go out and spend a significant amount of time with an individual person, we'll try to do that the best we can, but we you know, there is a limitation to what law enforcement can do, and that's why we need these other groups actually helping. And sure, if we talk to people that are sure dealing, if they wanted to change their ways or we could convince them or they wanted to work with us, I mean, we would be more than happy to do that. But in the drug world, you know, this is just reality. And some of those people are very hardcore and they make a lot of money off what they do. And it's a business to them. And they're not going to be that open and receptive to that. But if any of them were, we'd certainly work. You know, sometimes just tough, difficult things have to be done. Life is messy. And sometimes you have to embrace the mess and you have to get in there and work. And we have to do the tough things and the hard things and allow the other parts of the community to do some of that other more social type work. But I can assure you, we are absolutely all in on attacking this drug problem in our community from all different aspects.
You mentioned some of the different pieces of legislation going through the state legislature. Senator Alting, who represents your community, is a co-author on one such bill, which makes Tippecanoe County a pilot county for an opioid treatment program. I wanted to know what you make of that idea.
Well, I think it's a very good start. I mean, I know Prosecutor Harrington, I think, expressed some concerns in some media that he was involved with about some of the infrastructure that might need to be put in place here that we don't have to do that. But I think that's something we should look at being able to do. And I think when we get legislation or opportunities like that, we ought to work very hard as a community to get those pieces in place to see if we can make it work. I know North Central Health Services, who is a tremendous community partner, not only from the grants they make to the community, but the work that they do in mental health and addiction services, is looking to expand what they're able to do in addiction services in the community. And so I am hoping that we can build some partnerships with them and some other folks in the medical community, use that new law through the courts and the prosecutor and the department to make that us a pilot area and really benefit from it and get real value out of it. And there's some other parts of some of those laws, and you brought up Narcan earlier, where now people that we have to use Narcan on under certain circumstances could be involuntarily committed to treatment, at least for a period of time. I think that's a tremendous step. You know, many times I talk to families who are just heartbroken and devastated as they watch their loved ones go through this abuse cycle. And sometimes there's little or nothing that they can do to really get them help. They're powerless under some circumstances. So even a small change in a law like this that might give our families, where, you know, some of these folks that are struggling with addiction have a support system that love and care about them and want to help and want to try to get them in to services, this give them an additional option to make, and for sometimes the only option to do that. So I think those are great first steps. I applaud the legislature for taking this seriously. I thank Senator Alting for his work on this issue.
You sound a lot more interested in this than you sounded in the idea of having a needle exchange in your community.
Yeah, well, and a needle exchange in my mind is really has nothing to do with addiction. And if you go back to the original meeting that they had to talk about the needle exchange, they said this is not a drug addiction program. This is a public health program and a public health issue to stop the spread of HIV and hepatitis C. Yes, will we give people a pamphlet? Will we encourage them to get it? Yes, but they made it clear at that time that wasn't the focus. Wasn't the focus of that program.
Well, I think it's fairly clear that it's actually both, that it really is an addiction.
I don't think it is. If you just hand somebody a needle and a pamphlet, to me, that's not the same as getting somebody actually into some type of actual addiction program. You might encourage them. But to me, that's really not – it's a piece, but to me, that's not the same as some of these other programs that we're taking a look at that. And, you know, the needle exchange, as Dr. Adler said, is still a work in progress. I'm hoping that we can get to an appropriate location, so it is another piece of the pie. But it's never – if you go back, that was a public meeting. It was never – promoted really as an addiction program. I mean, they have some material they'll hand you, but they're not.
Well, I think the point is that you've got you have multiple problems. You have a public health problem. You have a law enforcement problem. And you've talked on this program about needing to address these in different ways. And so it seems like they're all tools in the same toolkit, are they not?
Well, they're all tools, but they need to be used appropriately and in the appropriate location. So I'm not going to, and I've made my point clear, I don't think I've ever wavered from this, that I'm not opposed to a needle exchange program done appropriately and done in the appropriate location where it doesn't do more than harm than good to a neighborhood or is not in a location that I think is appropriate for the community. I think I've been very clear on that. I don't think I've wavered from that, and that's what my position still is.
On to other things. There's a meeting upcoming about how the public should deal with panhandling in Lafayette. This is something that the police department has done in previous years as well. Why do you think such a meeting is necessary?
Well, you know, just here recently, it seems like we've got a significant number of calls that came in reference panhandling and panhandling that was a little bit more aggressive. And then we've got several calls that I took personally and people just stopping me in the grocery store and places that have been panhandled, but they really felt it was an operation where people were strategically picking out locations. They were approaching people. I even had a couple people tell me at the Payless there on Greenbush, they watched the people panhandle, walk over to the parking lot, hand the money to some other people in a car that was parked there in a car, and that it was really an operation. And so that's something we're not going to tolerate in our community. So we want to make sure if we have those taking place that we get those taken care of. And then the folks that really are in dire need and maybe feel that's their only resort, we really want to get them into services. We have a tremendous amount of services available for people to help them get them housed, get them working, move them towards self-sufficiency, programs to help with rent or their utility bills. And so we really want to encourage people to please not give out money and work with us to get these people into meaningful services that actually can change the direction of their life and to help them. And that's what we're trying to encourage people to do. And if it's people that need work, I mean, we have help wanted signs up all over town. And so we'll help people. We have different grants available through Work One. Everything from if you don't have a job, we'll train you to get a job. If you have a job, but you want to get a better job, we have money for that. If you need training on specific skill sets, we have money for that. We actually have more money than we have people right now. We need more people to sign up. So there are tremendous opportunities because our community is growing and we have opportunities here and we need to get these folks into meaningful services, or if they have mental health issues, to get them the help that they need. And just by simply giving out money is not in the long term going to solve the problem for them or for the community. And so we want to have these meetings to continue to educate people, make sure people in the community know all the resources that we have. We even have pamphlets we'll give to groups to hand out to people. And, you know, do those things to try to do what's right for the community and do what's right for the people that need help.
All right. Well, believe it or not, we have run out of time. It's one of the faster programs I think we've done.
Well, and that's pretty good considering I got here 15 seconds before we started, right?
You were right on time, as we say in the news business. So, yeah. Mr. Mayor, thanks as always. We appreciate your time, and we'll do it again next month. And remember to listen for this program next week. We'll be talking with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. Send your questions in advance of that show, if you like, to our email address. That's ask@wbaa.org. And you can tweet questions @WBAA News on Twitter. Find all of these programs archived at our website, WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.